So, very happy to be here with you. Where do I even start? Maybe it's good to start and say we are all Buddhists. Yeah? We all take refuge in the same Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. We don't have different Buddha, Dharmas, and Sanghas. Okay? So we all have the same objects of refuge. And that's what's really precious in our own hearts. We also all practice the Four Noble Truths, don't we? Yeah. We see the Four Noble Truths as the structure, the foundation of the Buddha's teachings. You know, he gets us to look at true dukkha so we understand our situation, the true origin so we understand what causes it, true cessation, so we know there's an alternative to our samsara, true paths, the path realizing selflessness, so we can overcome the ignorance and the mental afflictions that keep us trapped. So we all use the four truths as the basis of our practice. We all do the three higher trainings, training in ethical conduct, training in concentration, training in wisdom. Yeah. We may approach these practices slightly differently. The monastics may wear different robes, but the practice is basically the same. We all practice the four immeasurables. Yeah. Generating metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha, yeah, love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. So those are all common practices to all the Buddhist traditions. So the way the Buddha taught, or the way, let's say, we look at it from the Tibetan tradition, is that all the teachings are rooted in the practices that I just talked about, okay? They all come back to that. As Buddhism spread to different places, different teachings were emphasized, different sutras were emphasized, you know? And so we got different Buddhist traditions. And that's natural when things go to different places with different cultures, different kinds of people, then people will be more or less attracted to different sutras, different emphasis in their practice, and so on. But the basics there are all the same. Yeah. Especially, we also say that, you know, the Buddha taught the basic sutras, the Pali sutras, and because we are also a Mahayana tradition, we follow the Mahayana sutras. Now, some people say, oh, the Buddha didn't really teach those, okay? But I don't agree with that opinion, because when you read the Pali traditions, and you, the sutras in from the Pali tradition, and you read the Mahayana sutras, you see that they are very much related. What they're teaching, you know, are the same topics, but often just emphasizing a different point, okay? For example, we all have the same practice of the four Brahma Viharas, right? Do you do the practice of the four Brahmaviharas?
Not at the moment, because they are new, they're learning Buddhism.
Okay, so you're learning, but you will learn.
Yes, they will learn.
And these practices are beautiful practices, because they really teach us how to open our hearts and care about other living beings, how to forgive, how to wish others happiness, how to wish them to be free of suffering. So you'll learn these practices. So in the Mahayana tradition, we emphasize those practices, maybe a little bit more than in the Pali tradition, but they're the same practices. In addition, in the Mahayana tradition, we not only emphasize those practices, but we talk about making the focus of our life having so much love and compassion for other living beings that we want to become a Buddha so that we can help others just as much as the Buddha did. Okay? So we call this the bodhicitta, the mind of awakening, that builds upon the four Brahma Viharas, so that in our hearts we just, we want to become Buddhas so we can benefit others just like the Buddha did. Okay? The meditation on, you have shamatha and vipassana, We also have shamatha and vipassana, same kind of practice. So they're done in, especially the shamatha practice, they're done in very similar ways. The vipassana practice, there's, like I said, in the, you start with the basis of what the Buddha explained in the Pali Sutras, and then in the Mahayana Sutras, he explained more about what true cessation is. He explained the true paths, in a slightly different way. So these are the last two of the Four Noble Truths. And so, we see those practices in a slightly different way, but they are geared towards attaining nirvana, okay? And in the Mahayana tradition, we talk about the non-abiding nirvana of a Buddha. So it's a special kind of nirvana that we're seeking. When we look at the Buddhist traditions, the way we see it, the Vajrayana is not its own tradition unrelated to the other Buddhist traditions. And in fact, the Tibetan Buddhism is not just the Vajrayana tradition. And the Vajrayana tradition is also found in Japan. And there's some traces of it also in China. It spread to China in the early years, but it never really took root. So the way we see it is we all start practicing what we call the fundamental vehicle, the Pali Sutras, those things that I just explained. Then we build on that, the Mahayana tradition builds on that, and so we emphasize different points or we approach them in a slightly different way, and our motivation changes from seeking arhatship to seeking full Buddhahood. Then the Vajrayana is actually a branch of the Mahayana in the same way that the Pure Land is a branch, Chan or Zen is a branch of Mahayana, Huayan is a branch of Mahayana. Mahayana has many different branches. Vajrayana is one of them. Okay? It's not a separate tradition. So it's built on the teachings in the Pali tradition. It has many common factors with the Mahayana tradition. And then it has its own emphasis. Okay? And the emphasis in the Vajrayana is very much that one of using our imagination to help us along the path. The idea being that if we can't imagine something, we can't become it. So it's like when we're little kids. Did you dress up in your parents' clothes when you were a little kid? I think we all did. Or you dressed up, to be a fireman or police officer or a doctor or, whatever it was. So we played dress up when we were little kids. And we imagined being an adult. We imagined being able to do the things that people in these different professions did. In Vajrayana practice, what we often do is we imagine being a Buddha. Yeah. We aren't Buddhists yet, but we think, if I were a Buddha, yeah, how would the world look to me? If I were a Buddha, how would I act? Okay? And this is very helpful because if I imagine, okay, I'm going to be a Buddha, then am I going to get mad at my neighbor? Have you ever heard of a Buddha who gets mad at their neighbor? Yeah. Have you ever heard of a Buddha that gets jealous of their colleague? Yeah? The Buddha didn't have those kind of faults. So if I imagine that I'm going to be a Buddha and try and act like a Buddha, then I have to work on my anger, my jealousy, my greed, my ignorance, my arrogance. Yeah, I have to really oppose those kind of mental afflictions and instead really work to develop love and compassion and forgiveness and wisdom and concentration and ethical conduct. Okay, so this technique in the Vajrayana, where we do it with imagination, is very, very helpful to us to change our mind. Yeah. So when you look at, sometimes you look at the altar in the Tibetan tradition or in a Chinese temple, you see so many figures. It's like, who are all these people in the center there? That's a Lama Tsongkhapa. He was the 15th century great sage in Tibet. So just as in a Theravada temple, you will have pictures of your teachers and of the previous great masters, so we also have pictures or hear statues of Lama Tsongkhapa, his two chief disciples, Gyaltsev Jay and Khetrub Jay. Okay? We have, on the other side, there's a female Buddha in the center, surrounded by 21 other female Buddhas. Her name is Tara. So she symbolizes success and eliminating obstacles. Yeah. And she's a female manifestation of Buddhahood. Okay? So for women and for men, that lets us know that there's gender equality in Buddhism. Yeah? That women can also become Buddhas. That's very important to know. Okay. Who else? These are our teachers. You may know His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And Lama Yeshe, Lama Zopa, we have the Buddha in the center of our altar. Okay, there on the picture behind, there's a blue Buddha, okay? In Chinese Buddhism, you know about the medicine Buddha, yeah? That's how the medicine Buddha looks in the Tibetan tradition. He's blue, yeah? But he's holding a bowl, his alms bowl is filled with medicine. There's a statue there where with many heads. Yeah? You see this one next to the big statue just to the left of that. Okay, many heads and many arms. Okay? In Chinese Buddhism, you have Kuan Yin. Yeah, this is the way Kuan Yin looks in the Tibetan version. Now you might say, why does Kuan Yin have so many arms and legs? Yeah? It's symbolic representation of the qualities of a Buddha. Yeah? We look at people with our two eyes. If you have 11 heads, you have so many eyes you can look at sentient beings with. You can see who is doing well, who is suffering. Yeah? Who is confused, who is angry. And you think, how can I help these different living beings? Yeah, just like the Buddha did. So you not only have symbolic of seeing all these beings with your 11 heads, but you have 1,000 arms that symbolize that you're able to reach out and benefit sentient beings. Yeah. When you put your arms out like this, yeah? When you put your arms out, does it feel different than when you sit like this? Do the two things. This and this. Which one do you feel that you're open with? When you're like this, yeah? So Kuan Yin has so many arms to reach out to all those sentient beings. Yeah? Kuan Yin doesn't sit like this. Yeah? Kuan Yin like this. So it's showing us through symbols, yeah, through art, putting the qualities of a Buddha in a physical form so that we can relate to them. Yeah? So that's what you see, the different images all around you. But we say that all of them have the same nature as the Buddha. They all have the same realizations. Okay? So that's a little introduction. Maybe you have a few questions? Anything you'd like to ask? Yeah, in the Tibetan tradition, yeah, he's always blue.
Even in the Mahayana?
In the Chinese Mahayana, I usually see him in statues. What color is he in paintings? Yeah?
It's the symbology.
Yes, his hands are in the same way. Or often in Chinese Buddhism, his hands are like this with a bowl again holding mess. Do you know what color, and anybody know in general Mahayana, what color is the Buddha? Huh? Yeah, he holds the pagoda. He has blue hair, but all the Buddhas have blue hair. But I've never, you know, in the Chinese temples, I've never seen a painting. I've only seen statues. So I don't know what color he appears.
I think he has one, it's not blue.
Yeah? Okay. Well, we can find out.
Would you explain to the audience here the unique tradition, practice of the unification of method and wisdom in the Vajrayana tradition for enlightenment?
The special practice of?
Or unification of method and wisdom.
Yeah. Well, I think in all the Buddhist practices, we have the method aspect of the path, keeping ethical conduct, yeah, doing good deeds, creating merit, purifying our negative karma, yeah. In the Vajrayana, and then we also have the wisdom aspect of the path, yeah. And so in the Vajrayana, we just have a special way of putting these two together, which I don't want to go into detail on. Anything else? Other questions?
Question.
Yeah.
I argue with one American, all right? And he said that it's a sad case that what happened in Myanmar, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he has been a follower of this Buddhism for a long time. And he said that what happened in Burma kind of change his mind a little bit with the head of the Burma countries against the so-called
the Rohingya, yeah.
And that changed him, you see.
Yeah.
But what I agree with him is that the whole world is against a lot of places like in Bangladesh and all this, against the Buddhists, but he doesn't pick it up. But he only pick up Myanmar against the Americans.
Mm.
So how would that, okay, fight with him in that sense.
Okay, first of all, what's happening in Myanmar is from a Buddhist viewpoint, it's a real tragedy.
Yeah.
and the way some, but not all of the monks are acting, is against what the Buddha taught. Unfortunately, it's the people, the naughty ones, who get the attention, yeah, and have brought some disrepute to Buddhism as a whole. So I think in replying to people like that, first of all, to point out that it's only a few of the monastics who clearly do not understand the Dharma well. If the lay population takes that up, you know, they too haven't understood the Buddha's teachings, because the Buddha was very insistent on nonviolence. Very insistent on nonviolence, okay? Also, another point that's very important to realize is the Dharma that the Buddha taught is pure. Yeah, the three jewels we take refuge in are pure, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. They are undefiled. Religious institutions are created by human beings. Human beings, by and large, we have defilement. So religious institutions are going to have problems, okay? The Sangha members, we're not all enlightened, okay? We took the robe because we're trying to become enlightened. We're not all there yet. So don't expect us to be Buddhas, okay? We're trying to practice ethical conduct and concentration and wisdom and kindness, okay? But we're not all there yet. So our refuge, you know, what makes us a Buddhist and makes us believe in Buddhism is the teachings of the Buddha, you know, which when we study and practice those teachings, we see how they change our mind. And we see that these teachings are logical and reasonable and they make sense. So that's why we're Buddhists. Yeah. People who don't understand Buddhism, who encourage warfare or persecution, they are not Buddhas. They are acting contradictory to the Buddha's teachings. So we have to be very clear if other people question us about that, that they are not representative of what the Buddha taught. Okay. Yeah.
For ordinary Buddhists, we all believe that we undergo rebirth.
Yes.
We also understand that particularly Vajrayana is reincarnation. Can you explain what between rebirth and reincarnation?
Okay, there's a little bit of a vocabulary problem here. In Tibetan Buddhism, when we use the term reincarnation, we mean rebirth. Yeah, for us, the two terms mean the same thing. I know in some Theravada centers, they make a difference between rebirth and reincarnation. Yeah, and reincarnation means like that there's a soul or something that reincarnates. We don't believe that. Yeah, it's a translation of vocabulary problem. Okay, because just like the Theravada, we say everybody, you know, people are reborn. Yeah, and there's no soul that goes from one life to the next. Yeah, the Tibetans have the cultural tradition of identifying the next birth of some of the very well-respected teachers, okay? But again, these teachers don't have a soul. Yeah, there's no permanent, partless, independent soul. There's no substantial self, yeah, that is reborn. But the Tibetans, as part of their culture, they will sometimes try to identify the next birth of a very well-respected teacher. The idea being that then you take that child and give them a very good education, and that way they can hopefully become a great teacher in this life too. Yeah. I'm glad you asked that, because this is a common misunderstanding. Yeah.
remember the Dalai Lama said something. He said that he was not going to have a reborn of self. What did he mean by that? What happened to his lineage?
So the Dalai Lama is some, the institution of the Dalai Lama is Tibetan culture. It's how from the 16th century they passed on the leadership in Tibet. Yeah, because they thought it was much better that somebody who was spiritually realized was the leader of the country. But now His Holiness does not believe that. He wants there to be democracy in Tibet. So it's a very interesting situation. The Tibetans are the only culture I know of where the leader wants less power, but the people want him to have to stay in power. Mostly, people want democracy and they want the leader to, you know. But in Tibet, it's the opposite. But His Holiness, from his side, he resigned from all of his government activities and political positions many years ago because he said he wants to work on his spiritual practice. Yeah. When he says about maybe there's not going to be a future Dalai Lama, what he's saying is that in Tibetan culture, the position of the Dalai Lama, maybe they'll just forget about it. But from the side of the being who is the Dalai Lama, because he has so much compassion for living beings, I'm sure he himself will be reborn to benefit us. He may not be identified. They may not find the child and put him on a high throne and all this stuff. But from his side, because of his compassion, he'll definitely manifest. Okay? Because His Holiness's concern is because Communist China occupied Tibet and they're suppressing Buddhism in Tibet, so his concern is if the Chinese government identifies the next Dalai Lama, then they will manipulate that child so that their policies will be predominant in Tibet, and that will suppress Buddhism there. And so he doesn't want that to happen. So that's one of the reasons why he says, you know, there may not be another Dalai Lama. And it makes sense to me. Yeah? Because human beings, we make all these problems, don't we? You know? We make all these problems and politics and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and that doesn't benefit anybody.
Does that also goes for female Dalai Lama?
Okay, yeah, so I know there's been talk where His Holiness has said sometimes he could be. Maybe, actually, when a compassionate being takes rebirth out of compassion for others, they can appear in any form. Male form, female form, doesn't matter. Okay? Because their idea is they can control their rebirth, so they want to appear in a form that is most beneficial for other living beings. Because that's what's most important. Yeah? Yeah?
You mentioned that there are many schools resulting from different emphases, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in your opinion, what's your advice? What are the areas that we should emphasize on?
The common areas of all these different schools. They're the things that I brought up at the very beginning. Yeah, the Three Jewels of Refuge, the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Noble Path, the Three Higher Trainings, the Four Brahma Viharas. Yeah.
So it doesn't matter which sect or which schools you come from, right? Or learn from?
Everybody has to find what appeals to them best. Yeah? It's like if you have a big buffet dinner. Some people like rice, and some people like noodles, and some people, you know, like tofu, and some people eat other stuff. You know, but when you have a buffet, then everybody can choose what the food that they like. So in the same way, the Buddha taught many, many different things so that everybody can find among his many teachings something that appeals to them. Yeah? So you can choose the Buddhist tradition that speaks to your heart the best. Yeah? Doesn't matter which one you choose. Whichever Buddhist tradition you choose, practice it well. That's what's important. Yeah? Especially keep good ethical conduct and the five lay precepts. You know the five lay precepts? What are they? First one? Not to kill. Not to steal. No sexual misconduct. No lying. No intoxicants. Yeah? So these five, practice them well. If you practice them well, you will have many fewer problems in your life. Yeah? If you practice them well, you will create good karma and you won't create bad karma. If the whole society could practice the five precepts, even one precept, the first precept, not to kill. Let's say everybody in the world for one day practice the first precept. What would all the newspapers write about?
No.
Yeah?
No news.
There would be no killing, no attacks, no terrorism, nothing. People would not harm each other physically. Yeah? So if you practice even one precept, you are contributing to world peace. And that's important. Yeah, we all have to do that. And this is the kind, you know, starting with ethical conduct, this is what pleases the Buddha the most. We may talk about being very advanced practitioners, but if we can't act ethically and treat other people well, what are we doing? Yeah? So we have to start. And this is the responsibility of all of us. Don't just point the finger at the monastics, say, oh, this one. You look at yourself. Yeah? How am I behaving? Yeah? Am I kind to other people? Am I generous? Do I forgive when people do naughty things? Yeah? Buddhism is all about looking at ourselves in here. Yeah, and transforming our own mind so that we can become the kind of person we want to be. Yeah, it's about that. So we all have to practice.
Mm-hmm. My question about it's about tradition. Mm-hmm. Someone asked about tradition. Can someone progress on the path of Buddhism without going into a new tradition? Like, for example, I was thinking like in the field of medicine, you can go into heart surgery or whatever, but I just want to be a GP.
Oh, GP is a tradition.
but can you progress in a path without choosing a tradition?
You know, a tradition, it's a name, isn't it? Yeah. What we want to do is practice the Buddha's teachings. A name, Pali tradition, Sanskrit tradition, Theravada tradition, Mahayana, Chinese Buddhism, Sri Lankan Buddhism, Chinese Buddhism. These are all names. The important thing is that we transform our own mind. Okay? That's the thing. Otherwise, if we say, oh, I am this tradition, and my tradition is the best one. Yeah, my Buddhist tradition is the one true, highly advanced, best Buddhist tradition in the world. Then it sounds like you're rooting for a soccer team. Yeah? I want this soccer team to win because this football team, this soccer team is the best one because it's from my city. Yeah? We are not playing soccer. Yeah? We are trying to transform our minds to become better people, to help each other. So it doesn't really matter what you call yourself. Yeah? I went into one time, I went into one Buddhist retreat center. The first question that people ask me is, what Buddhist tradition are you? And I said, I'm a Buddhist. And the guy, he looked at me like, oh, that's pretty weird. You know? Then he took me on a tour. We went into the kitchen. The cook asked me, what Buddhist tradition are you? And then the guy from the front desk said, she says she's a Buddhist. You know? Who cares? I mean, I think the Buddha is the best. Yeah. But I'm not going around. Everybody has to be a Buddha, Buddhist. You have to be a Buddhist. Don't be another religion. Buddhism is best. And once you're a Buddhist, no, you've got to be Tibetan Buddhist. That one's the best. Rah, rah, rah. No, you've got to be Theravada Buddhist. That one's the best. Rah, rah. That is us confused sentient beings. You know? The Buddha didn't teach that. Okay? He taught ethical conduct, kindness, concentration, wisdom. That, follow what the Buddha taught.